Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 107, which happens to be the second episode in season 2 of Art for Your Ear. Yep, season 2. That means more interviews, more not-so-speedy speed rounds, and more wonderful support from Saatchi Art. They are the world's largest curated online gallery, offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can view all sorts of gorgeous work at SaatchiArt.com. And while we're talking about wonderful, generous sponsors, if your company is interested in co-sponsoring Art for Your Ear, just shoot me an email at contact@thejealouscurator.com. All right, today I'm talking to an artist from across the pond. I've written about her several times, but I have a lot of questions. Questions about pretend architecture, her materials, and a very inspiring North American adventure. Yep, I am chatting with London-based artist Charlotte Keats. And so, let's do that, shall we? Calling London. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, Danielle.
I'm so excited to finally kind of meet you.
I know. I've been following the podcast for so long as well.
I know, and I've written about you a bunch of times too. Yeah. And I see your your profile picture and all that, and it's so nice to actually put a voice to it. So, I have questions for you about architecture and traveling and painting and all the stuff.
Amazing.
Are you ready? You have tea. I have coffee.
I have tea.
We're on opposite sides of the world, and the magic is about to happen. So, if you've listened to the podcast, you know I like to hear childhood stories.
Yep.
So, I want to know, were you artsy when you were little?
Yeah, so I was really arty as a child. I was a typical arty kid, and my mum always remembers me bringing me to my sister's extra dance classes and just like sticking me in a corner with her, as long as I had a pencil and a piece of paper. But it's quite funny because I think I always drew what I saw, so I wasn't kind of sitting there drawing things from my imagination. I was drawing the dance teacher and my sister's shoes and things like that at like four or five.
Wow. So
it's quite funny. And my dad used to have a blue tack in his bureau in the study, and I always used to steal little bits of it every night before I go to bed until I had like this big lump of blue tack, and they thought I was asleep, and I'd have like, I'm such a night owl anyway. I'd take my lamp literally under the covers, and they'd come in the morning and be like, "What's Charlotte made today?" And I'd always make like faces and figurines.
That's hilarious. Oh my gosh. I bet he would have just given it to you if you just asked for a blob of blue tack.
I know. I don't know why I felt like I had to just take a bit each night and add to my collection.
Oh my god, that's so cute. It's like this little little nighttime fairy collecting her wares. That's actually really interesting, because do you do any sculptury stuff now?
Not at all. Yeah. Nothing. I know.
Sorry. Maybe you should.
I know. Maybe I should.
We'll do a Kickstarter and get you as much blue tack as you want. Just mounds and mounds of it sent to you from all over the world. Just imagine what you could do. Oh. So you have one sister. So were you kind of the drawing one?
Yeah. So no one else in my family is creative at all. So my grandma was really creative, but not in a kind of, not like artistic. She was really into crafts, and she did a lot of sewing and everything. And I spent a lot of time with her, and she encouraged me a lot, but she'd always say she couldn't draw a stick. But she'd always talk to me about color, and she'd always say, "Isn't it amazing how nothing in nature clashes?" Which I think is kind of stuck. I'm like, yeah, that is, I'm always out whenever I'm outside and I'm walking, I'm like, yeah, like that wouldn't work if you put those colors together, but it does.
That's insightful. I've never thought of that either.
Yeah.
And you know, being around all those craft materials, it's so exciting. I mean, I still find that, right? Like you walk into a sewing shop or something, it's just like, ooh, like all the colors and all the textures. And I've told this story before on the podcast, but my son was like that from birth. And I remember taking him into a sewing shop. We were looking for stuff for a Halloween costume. He was maybe two. And we went down the zipper aisle. And they had it arranged in it was like a full aisle. And it was arranged in a rainbow. But he loved it. We stood in front of it for probably half an hour, because he had to name every color.
Oh.
And I was just like, you know, and I'm in a rush and I've got like only, you know, a quarter in the meter. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to get a ticket. But I thought, you know, he was just in pure heaven and it was a heaven that I could understand. So I was like, you know what, kid?
Yeah.
Knock yourself
out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so did art school, first of all, did you go to art school? And secondly, yeah, was it a no-brainer to do that? Or what did your family think?
Yeah. So I did, so obviously really always creative, and then I did like a photography GCSE 2 years early.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that in our year nine, so I was about 13 maybe.
Oh my gosh.
13 14 I think. And it's quite funny because my dad was like, oh, you've done something creative, now you don't need to take art as a GCSE. And I was like, no, I still want to take art. It's just funny now because they're totally supportive and helped me lots. But I was trying to think about this earlier. I was like, I don't remember the kind of decision. I don't remember making that decision myself and being like, right, I'm going to go and study art. I don't feel like I ever did that. I think it just kind of happened, which is really weird to say. But I feel like I was always going to just study art. I don't know. It's strange. So yeah, then I went to Falmouth Uni,
mm-hmm,
which is in Cornwall. So I grew up in Somerset, so literally probably 3 hours south of there, right by the sea, and I had an amazing studio where you could just see the sea.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was so, so amazing. And I had really great teachers. And
were you a painting major, or were you still doing photography?
So I didn't really do that much photography, actually. So when I was in school and college, I did quite a lot of printmaking.
Oh, yeah.
So like lino cuts, and because I've always obviously loved structures. And I feel like with lino and with like woodcut, I was able to achieve that. Mm-hmm. I never really painted until I did. So I did a foundation course first, where you obviously tried out every kind of creative subject and field. So I tried graphic design and fashion, and you test everything, which was really great.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until then that I kind of discovered I wanted to paint, really. So I'd done like a little bit along the way, but I'd done more printmaking and installation, more conceptual work. Then at uni I tried painting. I was like, yeah, I kind of felt like I wanted to get really good at one thing, if that makes sense. I didn't want to.
Yeah, I mean, those foundation years are so fantastic because it is so fun to touch everything. But then, it is also kind of nice to, I mean, otherwise it's a bit overwhelming.
Yeah,
you know.
Really overwhelming.
But then did you find, because I am going to ask your inside secrets about your paintings in a minute, but did you find, because the control of doing lines in lino and woodcut and having that, you know, being able to create the look of a structure, has to be easier in printmaking than it is in painting, because you need that much more hand control and everything. So was it seamless, or was it like at a learning curve, or how did that go?
I think because both of them, you have to use drawing. I feel like drawing is the thing that completely underpins a lot. So when I was doing printmaking, I was drawing it out first onto the lino, and it was kind of that transition into drawing. So on the foundation, we did lots of observational drawing, and it was just line drawing. And that's when I think in the foundation, I did one, a large scale drawing of the studio that we were working in.
Mm.
And I think that's how that kind of kickstarted the whole thing.
Was that the assignment or?
Yeah.
Okay.
We were all there with easels and drawing like a whole, I think it was like 2 days of drawing solidly what was around us. But actually I loved it. That was the first time I think I'd made myself kind of stay on one thing for that amount of time.
Yeah. I just thought it was interesting because you said that about sitting in the dance studio drawing that, like, instead of from your imagination, you were drawing the things you were seeing. So I was wondering if you did it again in university, or if it was an assignment but I mean, it kind of makes sense. So did you ever want to study architecture?
No, strangely enough, no. I never even thought about doing architecture or kind of interior, because it's still I still like that I have control over it. I didn't want to be fulfilling a brief. And
right.
I feel like,
and it actually has to be built. Yours don't actually have to be. If it's not structurally sound, it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's not structurally sound. I just want to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
So I had never really thought of studying architecture, even though obviously I absolutely love, and I'm always drawn to architecture and kind of structures and buildings and interiors. So yeah, it kind of comes out in its own way.
Yeah. And I love your, the post that I love the past one, but then the one before that was, sort of all your cutaways, you know, where you've got like downstairs and upstairs, but it's, the angles are weird and there's, you know, these cutaways, but you can see the exterior and the interior. Like it's a make-believe architecture.
Yeah, that's it. So I kind of wanted to, all of those pieces started with, they kind of start with an idea of the construct or the part of architecture or kind of a section of a room. And then I get rid of that source material. So I get rid of the photo or whatever I was using and then just let it kind of unfold itself and try and, that's the bit that I find interesting, trying to make the space seem feasible. Does that make
sense?
Right,
yeah, yeah. So yeah, and like, it does feel like that. It feels like, I mean, I often want to like pay rent and move into your places because it's like, ooh, it's so beautiful. And so, and then, you know, the nature part of it is all mixed into it as well. And so I know that part of your artist statement talks about that, sort of the, like the blend of the nature and the structures. Yeah. And so why and where did that, like, where did that interest come from?
I don't really know. It was after my foundation year. I was then obviously on my degree, and I was looking at, again, I was painting in the studio. I always drew what I was seeing around me at that point. And I was looking at the idea of kind of like windows and the in-between spaces and where, how you can merge the outside with the inside and bringing the outside in and the inside out and kind of playing with those two concepts. But I quite like within my paintings, the outside and nature kind of is much more free for me painting wise. It's the kind of more abstract part to it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's the interesting thing, right? You have to have so much control when you're doing the
The structure.
The building part, yeah. And then the other part, I know, that's why it's such a cool combo. And your color choices are so cool, too. Nothing clashes in nature.
No, nothing clashes in nature.
Thanks, Grandma. and so how long, so it seems, because, you know, it's interesting when people go to university and sometimes what they were doing there looks nothing like what they're doing now. And so that's sort of where it all began for you, really.
Yeah, I feel like it's happened quite quickly for me. I've been quite lucky in that sense that everything's happened really quickly. But I suppose it wasn't until my final year that I started painting actual spaces. Before that, I was doing a lot of drawing, and I actually had some figures in my work as well. There were figures in the spaces, which now I don't ever paint figures or people.
You just don't want to, or they're not important to it anymore?
Yeah, I feel like they're not important to it anymore. I think that they create too much of a narrative.
Yeah.
And I think the viewer can place themselves or can imagine who lives there or who's been there. I think that's more of the interesting part for me, is that I want them to have their role in it as well, the viewer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because I don't think I would want to pay rent and move in if there was already people there.
Exactly.
Was just going to ask you, rewind in my brain. See, this is the thing I will cut out.
I could say about my ground, so the starting point.
Okay, go ahead.
The starting point in the paintings is the chalk ground. So I find that sort of acts as an initial kind of basis for the painting. So I discovered it at university. I had Lisa Wright as a tutor, and she was teaching us egg tempera. And for that, you had to make these grounds that were chalk and rabbit skin glue. And you had to prepare like 8 or so surfaces to paint on. And I got the combination of the grounds the completely wrong way around. So I had the percentage of the ratio of chalk to rabbit skin glue was the reverse.
Oh.
So I had all of these redundant boards that I couldn't use for the egg tempera. And so then I just decided to try painting on them and made the ground even more painterly and more gestural. And that's how that kind of came about.
Wow. Oh, good old happy accidents.
I know. It was a complete happy accident.
And did you think that at the time? Were you like, okay, here we go?
No, at the time I was like, what am I going to do with all these? And I was a poor student. I was like, I can't make this, I can't do this all over again.
I know, isn't that amazing, the resourcefulness of, I was a painting major too, and by fourth year I was out of money. And so I went to the first year printmaking studio because they'd been learning woodcuts. But then after they finished printing, they just throw the woodcuts in the garbage. And I would take them and flip them over and paint on the back of them.
Yeah, amazing.
I know. So my whole fourth year was like on this, on these wood panels, and I was like, free.
Yeah, amazing.
And so you paint on wood, right?
Yeah, it's all on panel.
Yeah, that's, yeah, because the wood grain comes through.
Yes, the wood grain comes through that ground, which is what I really like about them. But I am trying at the moment with some darker ground, so I'm not using the chalk ground that I usually use, which is interesting. So
yeah, how that goes. Dark ones are cool.
I wanna push it in any direction, try new ground. But
yeah, do you prime the whole thing a dark color and then go on top of that, or
yeah
is it kind of scary?
Yeah, although I actually find starting the dark grounds easier.
Oh.
In a strange way, I find that they're, because they've already got the color on, the dark ground on. I also feel like with a dark color, I feel like I can easily get it back to that. Whereas with the ground that I use initially, you can't ever get back to that.
So if I mess
it up, I can't sand it back down to what it was before.
Yes, that's a really good point. Yeah, it's not going to be wood grain anymore. I've got some really dark charcoal paper that I want to play with. For some reason, I'm finding it really intimidating. I don't know why.
It's dark charcoal.
Yeah, it's like between a black and like a really dark gray. And it's just sitting there. It's beautiful. It's just sitting there in my studio. So I got to put something on it.
Yeah, because yours are mainly on white, aren't they?
Yeah, and so I've just started playing around with colored paper, and it changes it changes things so much. And with yours, that the last series I wrote about, all the nighttime ones, the colors just pop like crazy.
Yeah, it's so different, and you have to think of the paint in a totally different sense, obviously, because the sort of green I would use normally doesn't show up properly, and then it's kind of an experiment on the board, which I really like. Like, that's what I'm enjoying about it. I think I'd maybe try some other colored backgrounds and see where they take me.
Do you use gouache?
No, they're all actually acrylic and oil.
Oh, okay.
So the brand Golden Acrylic, I find them really, really great. Because obviously they've got a really high percentage of pigment.
Mm-hmm.
And with the original ground that I paint on with the chalk, the paint gets absorbed into the chalk, and that's how the colors become so vibrant. But I do sometimes use gouache with on paper if I'm doing little studies or anything.
Yeah. I really like, I don't know, there's something nice about it. I wondered if you use gouache because it's got that matte finish.
Yeah. It's sort of can be opaque if it wants to be, and then it can be
much wash it. Yeah.
It's good. I should get back to gouache, actually.
It's so expensive, but it's a bit addictive.
Well, yeah.
so then you graduate from university.
Yeah.
And then where do you go and what do you do?
So then I moved straight to London,
mm-hmm.
and had never lived in a city before. So that was difficult.
Did you go by yourself or did you have friends?
No, I went with my boyfriend, so who I'm still, so he's a photographer and graphic designer.
Oh, okay.
And met on the foundation course down in Falmouth. and then we both moved to London without jobs or anything.
Just love. That's all you need. Just love in London. Mm-hmm.
then I got a job in an interior design company.
Oh, that's kind of perfect.
Yeah. So I did that for 2.5 years. And then was painting at the same time. So I was quite lucky in my degree show that one gallery came and saw my work and then did a show for me and a few others. So I was making work alongside working the whole time because I wanted the gallery kept wanting more work.
Oh, that's good.
Right? Which was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got another gallery in West Sussex just after having the first show with the Cornwall Gallery. So then I was basically running on 5 hours sleep a night.
Oh my gosh.
I was working and trying to make sure I had enough work to give to the galleries, because I didn't want to, obviously I was working, but I just wanted to be painting and not working.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though it was creative work, it was good. It wasn't what I really wanted to be doing, obviously.
Well, no, and it's so good that you had those galleries pushing you for work, because it's very easy to slip into, well, I'm going to get this job so that I, you know, can afford to still buy supplies, and then the job takes over and then you never make work.
No, so I think that it all happened at the right time for me. I think straight away having the gallery saying, oh, we want more work, it really pushed me, and it made me continue. So I never really had that break after uni of sitting back and saying no, because I was so set on getting a job because I was only needed to pay for my rent.
But
like, it all worked out quite well.
And so do you still have another job now, or are you a full-time artist now?
No, so I went full-time nearly 2 years ago.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah, so I know I'm very lucky, but I'm
no, you're
really
not. You're very talented. And so how many galleries are you with? Still the two, or how?
No, just so I showed with, about three galleries after graduating. And then now I am just showing with Arusha, who are amazing.
Okay. And are they in London?
No, so they're in Edinburgh.
Oh, yes, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So they're so good.
They're great. They're amazing. They the space they have is absolutely beautiful up there. But the thing is, they do shows all over the place. So they don't just, I've had two solo shows with them up there, but then they take my work to fairs all over the place, in Stockholm and London and everywhere. They do pop-ups. They're great.
Yeah. I get their emails all the time.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. And they always tell me when you're doing new stuff too, which is, I think maybe how I even heard about you. Yes. I think I heard about you from them.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So there you go. They are a great gallery.
They are a great gallery.
That's amazing. And so, okay, we have to talk about your giant trip.
Yes.
That was, okay, so go. North American adventure with Charlotte. Yeah,
well, we'd always wanted to go to America and Canada, and I'd never been to anywhere in America or Canada. And we basically bought a map and were like, right, let's start jotting down the places that we really, really want to visit. And it turned out to be kind of majority of America.
so
we were like, this will be way too expensive to fly in and out of each of these places. So we ended up hiring a camper literally driving the whole thing. Well, three quarters of the whole thing until our van broke down.
Oh no. Where did your van break down?
It broke down just outside Crater Lake.
Oh yeah. In California?
The snow.
Oh my gosh. It's beautiful there though. That's a good place to break down, I guess. But
yeah. So we took it, flew into New York and picked up the van in New Jersey and then drove all the way down the East Coast down to Florida Keys. And then up through New Orleans and Texas, up to Palm Springs, across to LA, then up the whole of the West Coast, and into like Yosemite and Sequoia along the way, and then broke down at Crater Lake, and ended up getting the train to from Portland to Vancouver.
Yes.
And then we hired another car and did Vancouver to Whistler to Jasper and Banff, and drove through the Rockies down to Canada.
Nice.
It was amazing.
Did you go through the Okanagan? Or did you cut through there? Ah, that's where I live.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I live kind of right in the middle of British Columbia, right on the U.S. border. So it depends which highway you take. So some people kind of go above and around the Okanagan when they go to Banff and Jasper. Or you can take the highway through it. And then so you probably went above us.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, next time.
Next time, for
I'm
sure.
Here, and I lived in Vancouver for 9 years, and I'm going to Whistler next weekend.
Ah, amazing!
So there you go. We almost crossed paths, but not quite. Yeah. And so, how long did you guys take to do that?
3 months.
Did you just love it?
It was absolutely incredible.
And were you just sketching and photographing the whole So, because I know you ended up doing a big show based on that. Did you do any painting on the road, or were you just collecting?
I just collected. I just did sketches, and I was jotting down kind of descriptive words and things that might trigger paintings when I come back. But I didn't actually do any painting when I was on the road at all.
Yeah. Did you think you would or no? Like, did you bring your stuff?
I brought a little bit, but not loads, because we just had like backpacks. Yeah. But I did. I got some paints while I was out there as well, but I actually didn't find myself, I found myself just sketching, and that was enough. It was more like recording and documenting,
yeah,
so that when I came back, I could kind of run with it. And I think it's more interesting for me when I came back to rely more on memory and sketches.
Yeah, I was going to say that, because it's more imaginary than just trying to recreate something exact.
Yeah, exactly. And that's more what I'm interested in, as opposed to just working from photos or something, although I did take a lot of photos.
Yeah. Which part do you think influenced you the most? Like, because there's some palm tree action. So, like, was it the Florida Keys? Was it Palm Springs? Was it?
I think Palm Springs massively.
Yeah.
Because it was like this little bubble of amazing mid-century modern architecture.
Yeah.
Which I just loved. And so many people had said to me, oh, with my previous work, loads of people, even before the palm trees were even in the work, they were like, your work is so inspired by California. Like, you must have been so many times. And I was like, I actually haven't ever been. So.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. So I felt like they were like, oh, you must go to Joshua Tree. You must go here. Like, which was great. Because when I was there, it was quite... it was quite bizarre, because I was there and like, wow, I can absolutely see why people would think this.
Yeah. You must have lived there in a former life or something.
Yeah, I know.
Just like lying by a pool, you know, in Palm Springs somewhere in a past life. Yeah, because they do very much have that feel.
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think Florida Keys as well.
Yeah.
I think Florida Keys, absolutely. And I did a few in the same series from Canada and the Rockies and Banff. We visited this amazing cosmic ray station in Banff, which was absolutely incredible, up on kind of in the mountains, in Sulphur Mountain.
Yeah, and what is it?
It's like a cosmic ray station. It's an old scientist's cosmic ray station.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so they used to go up there in the 60s, kind of in search of new cosmic rays, and stay there. It was amazing, because there was the building where all the satellites were trying to like do all the kind of work for it. Yeah. And then there was about a mile and a half hike to where they were actually staying, which is all on top of these mountains. So it was absolutely amazing.
Wow.
To see. Yeah.
And I hope you got good weather so you could see all of the amazing vistas.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We were really lucky actually, because it was so snowy, but it wasn't, it wasn't like really foggy.
It
was just like a little bit of like low-lying mist, which was amazing. Perfect.
I went there with my husband. We moved from Toronto to Vancouver, and we drove, and we stopped in Banff, and Greg had never been there before, and the whole thing was just completely socked in.
Oh, no.
And so I'm like, no, really, the mountains are stunning.
Oh.
You just can't see any of them.
Oh, no.
I know, so we'll have to go back again. But there's one of your pieces that has a little sort of, I think it's from the lake in Banff. There's like a little boat shed or something.
Oh yeah, yes.
Is that from Banff?
The boat shed, yes.
Yeah, I totally recognize that. I completely knew that's where it was from. And it's obvious, like you said, it's like it's got imagination mixed in with it, so it's not exact, but I could completely tell that that's where you got that.
Oh, that's so amazing. Yeah. That was, it was an old, I think if it's the right one with the red.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was an old boat. They said from like the 50s or 60s. It was really old. And it was just sitting on the water's edge.
Yep. Beautiful. And then in the summer, they'll have canoes all lined up along it, because you can take canoes out on the lake. And yeah, so cool. I knew it. see, this is really why I have this podcast, so I can prove that I'm right about things.
Yeah. Yep.
Told ya. Okay, that's all. That's all the time we have. so do you think there are more trips like this in your future?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're already talking about the next trip, but it won't be probably until 2019.
Yeah. And where do you think that will be? Back to North America or somewhere else?
No, I think Japan, China, and Indonesia.
Oh my gosh.
Hopefully. We'll see. But I'd always really wanted to go to Japan.
Yeah. And I can already picture the work.
Yeah. and there's also this absolutely amazing artist residency in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And it's on some old rice fields, and you're literally up and kind of level with the tops of the palm trees. Oh. And it looks absolutely incredible. So I'd absolutely love to do that. But
do you have to apply for that and all that stuff?
Yeah.
You got to do that. Yeah, we'll send that energy into the universe.
Yeah.
Rice paddies, palm trees.
Yeah.
I went to Bali a few years ago. Have you ever been there?
No, I've never been.
Oh, I went to Bali. It's the most magical place. It's just so odd. Like, it smells so good. Somebody told me before I went, they're like, oh, just smell as much as you can. Just suck in as much smell. And I was like, okay. And I landed in Bali. You get out of the airport and you are instantly hit with this waft of, because they put out little Hindu offerings every morning. And they're little banana leaf boxes, kind of, like little banana leaf squares. And they're filled with like jasmine flowers and incense and cigarettes and a little bit of money, and they're just left out every morning, but no one collects them.
They just stay
and then they rot, you know, and bikes ride over them and cars drive over them, and the next day everybody puts out another one. And so it's this like organic garbage that ends up smelling like flowers and tobacco and incense, and so the whole place just smells like that.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. You'll have to keep me posted on that. Well, you know what? I'll just keep watching your portfolio and I'll be able to tell when there's rice paddies and Japanese temples and that it's happening.
2020.
Yeah, there you go. That's going to come fast too, weirdly.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And so do you have shows that you're working on right now?
Yes. So I'm now working towards London Art Fair. Oh. Which I haven't done before. So
is that in October?
It's in January.
January, okay.
Yeah, so, but I'm a bit crazy in that I do all my framing down in Cornwall still. So I do, that goes from London down to the bottom end of the country to the very, very top in Edinburgh.
Do they ship it for you, or do you have to arrange all that?
No, I do all that. So I courier it around the country until it finally gets there. But so it means that I need to have the work kind of ready by Christmas for sure.
How many pieces are you doing?
I don't know whether you saw in the recent show, I did a grid of tiny pieces.
Oh, yes.
So I think I'm going to do another grid of 16 little pieces. Oh. And then I'm working on a mix of other sizes. So like a couple of big pieces and then some ones in between.
Wow. That's a lot of stuff.
It is, yeah.
How's that going? How far in are you?
It's good. It's going okay. I'm working on one of the really big ones right now. Well, right now it's like literally dry. Just before I came on here, I've just changed the color of one part and it's just completely soaked. So it's drying right now.
But perfect, perfect. Just let it dry.
Good timing. Yeah.
Well, you know what I wanted to ask you that I have never known, and I've been reading, trying to figure it out. Is your work just paint, or is it mixed media? Like, is there other stuff on there?
No, it's just paint. So it's paint. It's just paint. It's acrylic.
Yeah.
And a bit of oil, mainly oil bar.
Mm-hmm. So okay.
I kind of draw that on and then work with it on the board. So yeah, it's just paint, nothing else.
Wow. Because I was I was like, is there patterned paper stuck on there, or is there is that you know pencil too? And wow, that's even more amazing.
No. Oh, thanks.
I added that to my list of questions because I was like, I just have always assumed they were mixed media. And then I went back and read my posts about you. And I noticed, this is what I do when I don't know the answer. I just don't bring it up. I'm like, oh, I didn't say mixed media or paintings, which clearly means I have no idea. So I'm going to ask you. I know. So you've got London Art Fair coming up. And
London Art Fair coming up. And then we're talking, that's with Arusha, and then talking with them about doing, fingers crossed, one of the fairs in Miami next December and LA in January, which is really exciting.
Yes. Have you, like,
good crossed.
The ones that are happening with Art Basel, kind of like Scope or one of those ones?
Yeah, I'm not sure which yet.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the idea of it. So I think that's next December.
So not this one coming up, the next one.
Not this one. No, not this one coming up.
Have you ever been during Art Basel?
No, I haven't.
I went for the first time this past December.
Oh, did you?
Yes. How was it? It was amazing. It was so good. And I just like every corner I went around, I was like, oh my God, I love this. And then I'd go around another corner. Oh my God, I love this too.
Love that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so good. And the energy there is so fun. You know, like there's just a zillion people there and they're all there to see art and go to parties. Yeah. It's really fun.
No, it sounds incredible. I really, really hope I can go.
Yeah. Well, my fingers are crossed for you too.
Thanks.
I'm going to do a little self-promotion right here. So I put myself, there's this contest that was happening for that Bombay Sapphire and Artsy have teamed up to do this thing. And it was a call for North American artists. And there's all these prizes. And then basically they pick regional people and city people and blah, blah, blah. And then the finalists end up get to do a group show at Art Basel this coming year in Miami. And then there's a jury there, I think, and then whoever wins that ends up getting a solo show and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, one of my pieces, I'm a finalist.
Amazing.
I know.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
So, thank you. So the reason
so exciting.
I know, I could not believe it. I got peer pressured by my friend Jamie to put in a piece, and I really don't, you know, I'm not very good at promoting my own art, but I was like, she really shoved me into it. So I was like, okay, fine. And then I just got the email, like, a week ago, you're a finalist. And I was like, what?
That's amazing.
I know. So starting in September, I'm going to, because it's a voting online thing. So whoever gets the most votes online. So I am shamelessly going to hit up my Gels Curator community. And be like, you guys. Yeah. So anyway, I hope, and they fly you down to Miami for this group show.
No way. That's amazing.
Right? So really, fingers crossed, and then who knows, maybe next year I'll be there for some other reason and we can do sushi in Miami.
Yes, that sounds incredible.
So we will both just keep our fingers crossed so tight that we're like not even able to hold a paintbrush because they're crossed so tight. Okay, and so then I always like to ask too, so that's what's happening. Well, I guess your fingers are crossed for Miami, but are there any projects that you that are like crazy dream projects? Maybe that residency in Indonesia.
Yeah.
But is there anything that you're like, oh, if this happened, like a mural project, or is there anything that you would like dream of doing that we haven't covered already?
I feel like we've covered it, but I would love to. I'd love to get into more kind of publications. Like I love the like as in art books. Like I think the vitamin P books. Those kind of books. I love, they're my absolute favorite artist books. And I'd love to one day be in that or like in a, like a public collection, like a museum, something like that would be absolutely amazing.
I think that will happen.
Yeah. Well,
I always like to just say these things out loud, you know, because it's kind of amazing when you say them out loud, they so often end up happening. So there, it's out in the universe. That, Indonesia, and Miami next year.
Miami.
Okay, good. We've got
I'm
it all.
I'm asking a lot, aren't I?
No, you're not. Like, we'll just keep adding to the list. And I'm adding to the list too. Everybody vote for me. Okay, anyway. Okay, now finally, are you ready for the not so speedy speed round?
Yeah.
It's back for season two. I was thinking, should I do something different? And I was like, no, I love the not so speedy speed round. Okay, so ready? First one. Mm-hmm. Favorite breakfast food?
Ooh, I don't eat breakfast. Coffee.
You don't?
No,
I don't really.
I'm one of those
either.
Really bad people. I never liked breakfast.
I know, me either. And I also don't, I'm not hungry in the morning.
No, I'm not hungry. I definitely don't like eating first thing. I can't do it. Coffee. Lots of coffee.
Coffee. Okay. And you know what? Is there cream and sugar in there?
Yeah, milk for sure, but no sugar.
Okay, milk. All right. Well, you're getting some sort of something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, favorite lunch food then. Let's move along in the day.
Ooh, I don't know.
If you were going out for lunch, where would you go?
Like dim sum or something like that.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's lunch, but it's
it
really
is.
Good.
It's the only time you can get dim sum.
Dim sum or tapas or something like something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I lived it. We don't have any dim sum near us. We used to live in the quite a Chinese part of Vancouver. So there were amazing dim sum restaurants everywhere. And then now there's nothing and it's a real problem.
Means it's a treat when you have it.
Yes. We're going to Victoria in a couple of months and there's a really good place there. So we're already planning which day and yeah. Okay. Would you rather swim in a pool or an ocean?
Ooh, ocean every time.
Oh, I was curious because there's so many pools in your work.
No. Yeah. No, definitely, ocean. Definitely the ocean.
Are you afraid of any of the creatures in the ocean?
If I was probably, if I was in the ocean in Florida, yes. But
yeah.
Over here, no, I'm fine over here.
But, okay, good.
Obviously at uni, I was right by the sea, so yeah.
Is it warm enough to jump in?
No, it's definitely not warm enough, but I still do it.
I was going to say, I cannot picture that. That is very, very cold. That's like going in the ocean in Canada. You know, it has to be a really quick dip and back out.
Yeah, in and out.
But at least you don't have to worry about like sharks and crocodiles.
No, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The seaweed.
Yeah. Okay, so, well, that leads to this and your trip across North America. The scariest and or weirdest animal that you've ever seen in the wild. Did you guys see anything on your trip?
Bears.
You saw some?
We saw bears in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And we were at an overlook. And Ian was outside the van. He was like, quick, come here. Look at the bears. And there was two tiny baby bears perched on this little rock, probably only 10 meters away.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And we were like, oh, my God. And he ran and got his camera, and then all of a sudden he literally yelled at me like to get back in the van, and we could see the mother bear literally crawling up the edge of the cliff to us, probably 5 meters away. It was terrifying.
Oh my God. Yes, because when you see baby bears, there is an angry mama nearby.
Yeah. And she was so low down to the ground, she was just like slithering up the hillside, and we were like,
oh boy, she was coming to get you.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is very, very scary. So where is that? Tennessee? Where are the Blue Ridge?
That was kind of near North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Like down that.
Ooh, that's got a little bit scary. Did you see anything in Banff or Jasper or anything?
Nothing in Banff. Oh, hang on. We did see elk.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In Banff, just walking through the street.
Yeah.
and we saw bison near the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
But we didn't see any buffalo. I really wanted to see buffalo.
Yeah, I think that it's quite rare to see them now, isn't it?
Yeah. We didn't see them.
Well, I am Canadian. I have lived here my entire life. I've never seen a bear.
Have you not?
No. And so I was just in Italy for a couple of weeks away from my son for the first time for that long. And I was kind of freaking out to be away from him for that long. But, you know, it's fine. He was with my husband. They were having a great time. I phoned every night to make sure everything was cool. Nobody was, you know, broken ankle or anything. All good. And then my second to last day, I phoned. I'm like, hey, how's your day going? He's like, great. He's like, just a second. I'm going to put you on speaker. And he says, Charlie, tell mommy what we saw today. A bear in our driveway.
In your driveway?
Yes. And I was just like, oh my God, put me on a plane. I need to get home immediately. It's like mama bear versus mama bear. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, there was a giant bear in our yard. And then, so I got home a couple days later and Greg's like, I've been watching, but it hasn't been anywhere. And then I saw it just like wandering around. Like we live on the backside of a mountain and there he is or she, I don't know, but huge.
Huge.
Yeah. Wow. So now we have two little sausage dogs, two little wiener dogs. So whenever we go out, we're like making sure.
Leads. Put them on the lead.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, I thought with your trip, I was like, I have to see what she saw out there.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because I felt so unprepared because obviously everyone over there is used to it. And I was like, when we were walking through, we walked through this big forest to get to this place called Taft Point, which is beautiful. And I suddenly realized, I was like, we're only walking, two of us by ourselves. We don't have any bear spray. We don't have anything to make like loud noises. I was like, you don't even think about this at home because you don't have anything scary.
Yeah.
And I was like, we should be more prepared.
I My brother worked up at a park in British Columbia. Did you go through Manning Park by any chance?
No.
It's a big provincial park. He worked up there as a landscaper for years. And we went for a hike with him. And he's hilarious, but he's like singing opera and stuff really, really loud. And we're like, okay, what you doing there? And he was just like, oh, I'm scaring away the bears. And we were walking on this tiny little trail, and it was like, you could bump your right shoulder on mountain, and then the left side just dropped away. So we had to walk in single file. So we're walking in single file. We had to step over a giant steaming mound of bear poo. Which meant,
so you knew they were
yeah.
near.
Oh my god! And Greg and I lived in that. We had just moved from Toronto. We're living in downtown Vancouver, and we're like, yeah, we're kind of done with wilderness now. Let's head back to the lodge for lunch. Yeah. Like, no, yeah. So, same thing. We totally felt not, you know, ill prepared too. So,
yeah,
yeah. You gotta be ready.
I know.
Anyway, I just needed to know that. And then I had another question for you. Something that you brought up. But then I kind of asked it, I guess. I was going to ask you, if you could travel anywhere, where would you go? But I kind of already know now.
Yeah.
Japan, Indonesia. Well, you have to keep me posted on all of that. I'm very interested to hear what happens.
Yeah, no, I definitely will.
Thank you so much for this. You answered all of the many questions that I did not know. Now I know all the stuff. And now I'm going to go back and marvel at your work even more.
Oh. No, thank you so much for having me. Yeah. I listen to the podcasts literally all the time in the studio because they're so great. I think I said to you before that they're so good to listen to because they, like, you're not, for one, you're not very aware of the time when you're listening to them. Then I find when I'm listening to music in the studio, you're really aware that 3 minutes has just passed.
That's,
you know?
Right.
So, with a podcast and with something that's like inspiring and really insightful to listen to, you're like, this is great.
I know, so it's nice. Really I really like it too. I love just hearing everyone's stories is so, it's just so nice and it's so relaxing. It's just,
yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of eavesdropping.
Yeah.
I really like going to cafes and just like listening into people's conversations.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of people say that they feel like they're just working in their studio and they can overhear people talking in the studio next door.
Yeah, it does feel like that. That's a really good one describing, actually.
So yeah, then people can listen in on us while we're having our coffee and tea and talking about bears.
So true.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking the time to do this. It's your dinner time and my breakfast time, which is why I only have coffee here with me. But thank you so much for doing this. And I'm going to keep an eye on Instagram and see where your next adventure takes you.
Amazing. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Good to see you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
How was that for almost an hour worth of eavesdropping? I loved so much of that. It might be a tie between imagining a little Charlotte gathering bits of blue tack late at night and that bear cub story. Thank you so much to Charlotte for taking us behind the scenes of her architecture / nature inspired scenes. Thanks to Saatchi Art for continuing to support Art for Your Ear. And thank you so much for listening. And yes, major self-promotion. Please vote for me to win a spot at the Bombay Sapphire / Artsy Show in Miami. I'm going to put a voting link, because this really is shameless self-promotion, at the bottom of Charlotte's post on my site, thejealouscurator.com. Okay, that's it. I'm done now. Again, thank you so much for listening, and there will be more art for your ear next weekend. See you then.